Chapter 4, Detta on the Other Side. 1. You must be on your guard, the gunslinger said, and Eddie had agreed. But the gunslinger knew Eddie didn't know what he was talking about. The whole back half of Eddie's mind, where survival is or isn't, didn't get the message. The gunslinger saw this. It was a good thing for Eddie he did. 2. In the middle of the night, Detta Walker's eyes sprang open. They were full of starlight and clear intelligence. She remembered everything. How she had fought them, how they had tied her into her chair, how they had taunted her, calling her nigger bitch, nigger bitch. She remembered monsters coming out of the waves, and she remembered how one of the men, the older, had killed one of them. The younger had built a fire and cooked it, and then had offered her smoking monster meat on a stick, grinning. She remembered spitting in his face, remembered his grin turning into an angry, honky scowl. He had hit her upside the face and told her, "Well, that's all right, you'll come around, nigger bitch. Wait and see if you don't." Then he and the really bad man had laughed, and the really bad man had brought out a haunch of beef, which he had spitted and slowly cooked over the fire on the beach of this alien place to which they had brought her. The smell of the slowly roasting beef had been seductive, but she had made no sign. Even when the younger one had waved a chunk of it near her face, chanting, "Bite for it, nigga bitch, go on and bite for it," she had sat like stone, holding herself in. Then she had slept, and now she was awake, and the ropes they had tied her with were gone. She was no longer in her chair, but lying on one blanket and under another, far above the high tide line, where the lobster thing still wandered and questioned and snatched the odd unfortunate gull out of the air. She looked to her left and saw nothing. She looked to her right and saw two sleeping men wrapped in two piles of blankets. The younger one was closer, and the really bad man had taken off his gun belts and laid them by him. The guns were still in them. "You made a bad mistake, Muffa," Detta thought, and rolled to her right. The gritty crunch and squeak of her body on the sand was inaudible under the wind, the waves, the questioning creatures. She crawled slowly along the sand, like one of the lobstrosities herself, her eyes glittering. She reached the gun belts and pulled one of the guns. It was very heavy, the grip smooth and somehow independently deadly in her hand. The heaviness didn't bother her. She had strong arms, did Detta Walker. She crawled a little further. The younger man was no more than a snoring rock, but the really bad man stirred a little in his sleep, and she froze with a snarl tattooed on her face until he quieted again.
"He be one sneaky son bitch. You check, Detta. You check, be sure."
She found the worn chamber release, tried to shove it forward, got nothing, and pulled it instead. The chamber swung open.
"Loaded! Fucker be loaded! You gonna do this young cocky to walk first, and that really bad man be waking up, and you gonna give him one big grin, smile, honey child, so I can see where you is, and then you gonna clean his clock something righteous."
She swung the chamber back, started to pull the hammer, and then waited. When the wind kicked up a gust, she pulled the hammer to full cock. Detta pointed Roland's gun at Eddie's temple. 3. The gunslinger watched all this from one half-open eye. The fever was back, but not bad yet, not so bad that he must mistrust himself. So he waited. That one half-open eye, the finger on the trigger of his body, the body which had always been his revolver, when there was no revolver at hand. She pulled the trigger. Click. Of course, click. When he and Eddie had come back with the waterskins from their palaver, Odetta Holmes had been deeply asleep in her wheelchair, slumped to one side. They had made her the best bed they could on the sand and carried her gently from her wheelchair to the spread blankets. Eddie had been sure she would awake, but Roland knew better. He had killed, Eddie had built a fire, and they had eaten, saving a portion aside for Odetta in the morning. Then they had talked, and Eddie had said something which burst upon Roland like a sudden flare of lightning. It was too bright and too brief to be total understanding, but he saw much, the way one may discern the lay of the land in a single lucky stroke of lightning. He could have told Eddie then, but did not. He understood that he must be Eddie's court, and when one of Court's pupils was left hurt and bleeding by some unexpected blow, Court's response had always been the same. A child doesn't understand a hammer until he's mashed his finger at a nail. Get up and stop whining, maggot. You have forgotten the face of your father. So Eddie had fallen asleep, even though Roland had told him he must be on his guard. And when Roland was sure they both slept, he had waited longer for the lady, who could, he thought, be sly. He had reloaded his guns with spent casings, unstrapped them, that caused a pang, and put them by Eddie. Then he waited. 1 hour. 2, 3. Halfway through the 4th hour, as his tired and feverish body tried to drowse, he sensed, rather than saw, the lady come awake, and came fully awake himself. He watched her roll over. He watched her turn her hands into claws and pull herself along the sand to where his gun belts lay. He watched her take one of them out, come closer to Eddie, and then pause, her head cocking, her nostrils swelling and contracting, doing more than smelling the air, tasting it. Yes, this was the woman he had brought across. When she glanced toward the gunslinger, he did more than feign sleep, because she would have sensed sham. He went to sleep. When he sensed her gaze shift away, he awoke and opened that single eye again. He saw her begin to raise the gun. She did this with less effort than Eddie had shown the first time Roland saw him do the same thing, and point it toward Eddie's head. Then she paused, her face filled with an inexpressible cunning. In that moment, she reminded him of Martin. She fiddled with the cylinder, getting it wrong at first, then swinging it open. She looked at the heads of the shells. Roland tensed, waiting first to see if she would know the firing pins had already been struck, waiting next to see if she would turn the gun, look into the other end of the cylinder, and see there was only emptiness there instead of lead. He had thought of loading the guns with cartridges which had already misfired, but only briefly. Court had taught them that every gun is ultimately ruled by old man Splitfoot, and a cartridge which misfires once may not do so a second time. If she did that, he would spring at once. But she swung the cylinder back in, began to cock the hammer, and then paused again. Paused for the wind to mask the single low click. He thought, here is another. God, she's evil, this one, and she's legless, but she's a gunslinger, as sure as Eddie is one. He waited with her. The wind gusted. She pulled the hammer to full cock and placed it half an inch from Eddie's temple. With a grin that was a ghoul's grimace, she pulled the trigger. Click. He waited. She pulled it again, and again, and again. Click, click, click.
Muffer!
She screamed, and reversed the gun with liquid grace. Roland coiled, but did not leap. A child doesn't understand a hammer until he's mashed his finger at a nail. If she kills him, she kills you. Doesn't matter, the voice of Court answered inexorably. Eddie stirred, and his reflexes were not bad. He moved fast enough to avoid being driven unconscious or killed. Instead of coming down on the vulnerable temple, the heavy gun butt cracked the side of his jaw.
What? Jesus! Martha! Honky Martha!
Detta screamed, and Roland saw her raise the gun a second time. And even though she was legless and Eddie was rolling away, it was as much as he dared. If Eddie hadn't learned the lesson now, he never would. The next time the gunslinger told Eddie to be on his guard, Eddie would be. And besides, the bitch was quick. It would not be wise to depend further than this on either Eddie's quickness or the lady's infirmity. He uncoiled, flying over Eddie and knocking her backward, ending up on top of her.
You want it, mother?
She screamed at him, simultaneously rolling her crotch against his groin and raising the arm which still held the gun above his head.
You want it? I gon' give you what you want, show!
Eddie! He shouted again, not just yelling now, but commanding. For a moment, Eddie just went on squatting there, eyes wide, blood dripping from his jaw, it had already begun to swell, staring, eyes wide. Move! Can't you move? He thought. Or is it that you don't want to? His strength was fading now, and the next time she brought that heavy gun butt down, she was going to break his arm with it. That was, if he got his arm up in time. If he didn't, she was going to break his head with it. Then Eddie moved. He caught the gun on the downswing, and she shrieked, turning toward him, biting at him like a vampire, cursing him in a gutter patois so darkly southern that even Eddie couldn't understand it. To Roland, it sounded as if the woman had suddenly begun to speak in a foreign language. But Eddie was able to yank the gun out of her hand, and with the impending bludgeon gone, Roland was able to pin her. She did not quit even then, but continued to buck and heave and curse, sweat standing out all over her dark face. Eddie stared, mouth opening and closing like the mouth of a fish. He touched tentatively at his jaw, winced, pulled his fingers back, examined them and the blood on them. She was screaming that she would kill them both. They could try and rape her, but she would kill them with her cunt. They would see. That was one bad son of a bitch in cave with teeth around the entrance, and if they wanted to try and explore it, they would find out. "What in the hell?" Eddie said stupidly. "One of my gun belts," the gunslinger panted harshly at him. "Get it! I'm going to roll her over on top of me, and you're going to grab her arms and tie her hands behind her." "You ain't never!" Detta shrieked, and sunfished her legless body with such sudden force that she almost bucked Roland off. He felt her trying to bring the remainder of her right thigh up again and again, wanting to drive it into his balls.
"She—"
"Move, gods curse your father's face!" Roland roared, and at last Eddie moved. 4. They almost lost control of her twice during the tying and binding, but Eddie was at last able to slip knot one of Roland's gun belts around her wrists when Roland, using all his force, finally brought them together behind her, all the time drawing back from her lunging bites like a mongoose from a snake, the bites he avoided, but before Eddie had finished, the gunslinger was drenched with spittle, and then Eddie dragged her off, holding the short leash of the makeshift slip knot to do it. He did not want to hurt this thrashing, screaming, cursing thing. It was uglier than the lobstrosities by far, because of the greater intelligence which informed it, but he knew it could also be beautiful. He did not want to harm the other person the vessel held somewhere inside it, like a live dove deep inside one of the secret compartments in a magician's magic box. Odetta Holmes was somewhere inside that screaming, screeching thing. 5. Although his last mount, a mule, had died too long ago to remember, the gunslinger still had a piece of its tether rope, which in turn had once been a fine gunslinger's lariat. They used this to bind her in her wheelchair, as she had imagined, or falsely remembered, and in the end they both came to the same thing, didn't they? They had done already. Then they drew away from her. If not for the crawling lobster things, Eddie would have gone down to the water and washed his hands.
"I feel like I'm going to vomit," he said in a voice that jig-jagged up and down the scale like the voice of an adolescent boy. "Why don't you go on and eat each other's cocks?"
the struggling thing in the chair screeched.
"Why don't you just go on and do that if you're afraid of a black woman's cunny? You just go on, show, suck on yo each one's candles. Do it while you got a chance, 'cause Daddy Walker gonna get out in his chair and cut them skinny old white candles off and feed them to those walking buzzsaws down there."
She's the woman I was in. Do you believe me now?
"I believed you before," Eddie said. "I told you that."
You believed. You believed it on the top of your mind. Do you believe it all the way down now? All the way to the bottom? Eddie looked at the shrieking, convulsing thing in the chair, and then looked away, white except for the slash on his jaw, which was still dripping a little. That side of his face was beginning to look a little like a balloon.
"Yes," he said. "God, yes.
This woman is a monster." Eddie began to cry. The gunslinger wanted to comfort him, could not commit such a sacrilege. He remembered Jake too well, and walked off into the dark with his new fever burning and aching inside him. 6. Much earlier on that night, while Odetta still slept, Eddie said he thought he might understand what was wrong with her. Might. The gunslinger asked what he meant. She could be a schizophrenic. Roland only shook his head. Eddie explained what he understood of schizophrenia, gleanings from such films as The Three Faces of Eve and various TV programs, mostly the soap operas he and Henry had often watched while stoned. Roland had nodded. Yes. The disease Eddie described sounded about right. A woman with two faces, one light and one dark. A face like the one the man in black had shown him on the fifth tarot card. And they don't know, these schizophrenes, that they have another?
No, Eddie said. But...
He trailed off, moodily watching the lobstrosities crawl and question and crawl. But what?
I'm no shrink, Eddie said. So I don't really know shrink.
What is a shrink? Eddie tapped his temple.
A head doctor. A doctor for your mind. They're really called psychiatrists.
Roland nodded. He liked shrink better, because this lady's mind was too large, twice as large as it needed to be.
But I think schizos almost always know something is wrong with them, Eddie said, because there are blanks. Maybe I'm wrong, but I always got the idea that there were usually two people who thought they had partial amnesia, because of the blank spaces in their memories when the other personality was in control. She says she remembers everything. She really thinks she remembers everything.
I thought you said she didn't believe any of this was happening.
Yeah, Eddie said. But forget that for now. I'm trying to say that no matter what she believes, what she remembers goes right from her living room where she was sitting in her bathrobe watching the midnight news to here, with no break at all. She doesn't have any sense that some other person took over between then and when you grabbed her in Macy's. Hell, that might have been the next day, or even weeks later. I know it was still winter because most of the shoppers in that store were wearing coats.
The gunslinger nodded. Eddie's perceptions were sharpening. That was good. He had missed the boots and scarves, the gloves sticking out of coat pockets, but it was still a start.
But otherwise it's impossible to tell how long Odetta was that other woman, because she doesn't know. I think she's in a situation she's never been in before, and her way of protecting both sides is a story about getting cracked over the head.
Roland nodded.
And the rings. Seeing those really shook her up. She tried not to show it, but it showed all right.
Roland asked, if these two women don't know they exist in the same body, and if they don't even suspect that something may be wrong, if each has her own separate chain of memories, partly real but partly made up to fit the times the other is there, what are we to do with her? How are we even to live with her? Eddie had shrugged.
Don't ask me. It's your problem. You're the one who says you need her. Hell, you risked your neck to bring her here.
Eddie thought about this for a minute, remembered squatting over Roland's body with Roland's knife held just above the gunslinger's throat, and laughed abruptly and without humor.
Literally risked your neck, man, he thought.
A silence fell between them. Odetta had by then been breathing quietly. As the gunslinger was about to reiterate his warning for Eddie to be on guard and announce loud enough for the lady to hear, if she was only shamming, that he was going to turn in, Eddie said the thing which lighted Roland's mind in a single sudden glare, the thing which made him understand at least part of what he needed so badly to know. At the end, when they came through, she had changed at the end. And he had seen something, some thing.
Tell you what, Eddie said, moodily stirring the remains of the fire with a split claw from this night's kill. When you brought her through, I felt like I was a schizo.
Why? Eddie thought, then shrugged. It was too hard to explain. Or maybe he was just too tired.
It's not important.
Why? Eddie looked at Roland, saw he was asking a serious question for a serious reason, or thought he was, and took a minute to think back.
It's really hard to describe, man. It was looking in that door. That's what freaked me out. When you see someone move in that door, it's like you're moving with them. You know what I'm talking about.
Roland nodded.
Well, I watched it like it was a movie. Never mind, it's not important. Until the very end.
Then you turned her toward this side of the doorway, and for the first time I was looking at myself. It was like... He groped and could find nothing. I don't know. It should have been like looking in a mirror, I guess, but it wasn't, because it was like looking at another person. It was like being turned inside out, like being in two places at the same time. Shit, I don't know. But the gunslinger was thunderstruck. That was what he had sensed as they came through. That was what had happened to her. No, not just her. Them. For a moment, Detta and Odetta had looked at each other. Not the way one would look at her reflection in a mirror, but as separate people. The mirror became a window pane, and for a moment Odetta had seen Detta, and Detta had seen Odetta, and had been equally horror-struck. They each know, the gunslinger thought grimly. They may not have known before, but they do now. They can try to hide it from themselves, but for a moment they saw, they knew. And that knowing must still be there. Roland? What? Just wanted to make sure you hadn't gone to sleep with your eyes open. Because for a minute you looked like you were, you know, long ago and far away. If so, I'm back now, the gunslinger said. I'm going to turn in. Remember what I said, Eddie. Be on your guard. I'll watch, Eddie said. But Roland knew that, sick or not, he would have to be the one to do the watching tonight. Everything else had followed from that. 7. Following the ruckus, Eddie and Detta Walker eventually went to sleep again. She did not so much fall asleep as drop into an exhausted state of unconsciousness in her chair, lolling to one side against the restraining ropes. The gunslinger, however, lay wakeful. I will have to bring the two of them to battle, he thought. But he didn't need one of Eddie's shrinks to tell him that such a battle might be to the death. If the Bright One, Odetta, were to win that battle, all might yet be well. If the Dark One were to win it, all would surely be lost with her. Yet he sensed that what really needed doing was not killing, but joining. He had already recognized much that would be of value to him, them, in Detta Walker's gutter toughness, and he wanted her. But he wanted her under control. There was a long way to go. Detta thought he and Eddie were monsters of some species she called Honk Muffas. That was only dangerous delusion, but there would be real monsters along the way. The Lobstrosities were not the first, nor would they be the last. The fight-until-you-drop woman he had entered and who would come out of hiding again tonight might come in very handy in a fight against such monsters if she could be tempered by Odetta Holmes's calm humanity. Especially now, with him short two fingers, almost out of bullets, and growing more fever. But that is a step ahead. I think if I can make them acknowledge each other, that would bring them into confrontation. How may it be done? He lay awake all that long night, thinking. And although he felt the fever in him grow, he found no answer to his question. 8. Eddie woke up shortly before daybreak, saw the gunslinger sitting near the ashes of last night's fire, with his blanket wrapped around him Indian fashion, and joined him. "How do you feel?" Eddie asked in a low voice. The lady still slept in her crisscrossing of ropes, although she occasionally jerked and muttered and moaned. "All right." Eddie gave him an appraising glance. "You don't look all right." "Thank you, Eddie," the gunslinger said dryly. "You're shivering. It will pass." The lady jerked and moaned again, this time a word that was almost understandable. It might have been Oxford. "God, I hate to see you tied up like that," Eddie murmured, "like a goddamn calf in a barn." "She'll wake soon. Mayhap we can unloose her when she does." It was the closest either of them came to saying out loud that when the lady in the chair opened her eyes, the calm, if slightly puzzled, gaze of Odetta Holmes might greet them. 15 minutes later, as the first sun rays struck over the hills, those eyes did open. But what the men saw was not the calm gaze of Odetta Holmes, but the mad glare of Detta Walker.
"How many times you done raped me while I was buzzed out?" she asked. "My cunt feel all slick and tallowy, like somebody done been at it with a couple of them little bitty white candles you gray-meat muffers call cocks."
Roland sighed. "Let's get going," he said, and gained his feet with a grimace.
"I ain't going nowhere with you, muffer."
Detta spat.
"Oh, yes, you are," Eddie said.
"Dreadfully sorry, my dear. Where you think I'm gone?"
"Well," Eddie said, "what was behind door number one wasn't so hot, and what was behind door number two was even worse. So now, instead of quitting like sane people, we're going to go right on ahead and check out door number three. The way things have been going, I think it's likely to be something like Godzilla, or Ghidra, the three-headed monster, but I'm an optimist. I'm still hoping for the stainless steel cookware."
"I ain't going."
"You're going all right," Eddie said, and walked behind her chair.
She began struggling again, but the gunslinger had made these knots, and her struggles only drew them tighter. Soon enough she saw this and ceased. She was full of poison, but far from stupid. But she looked back over her shoulder at Eddie with a grin which made him recoil a little. It seemed to him the most evil expression he had ever seen on a human face.
"Well, maybe I'll be going on a little way," she said. "But maybe not so far as you think, white boy. And sure God, not so fast as you think."
"What do you mean?"
That leering, over-the-shoulder grin again.
"You find out, white boy."
Her eyes, mad but cogent, shifted briefly to the gunslinger. "You both be finding that out." Eddie wrapped his hands around the bicycle grips at the ends of the push-handles on the back of her wheelchair, and they began north again, now leaving not only footprints, but the twin tracks of the lady's chair as they moved up the seemingly endless beach. 9. The day was a nightmare. It was hard to calculate distance traveled when you were moving along a landscape which varied so little, but Eddie knew their progress had slowed to a crawl. And he knew who was responsible. Oh, yeah.
"You both be finding that out," Detta had said.
And they hadn't been on the move more than half an hour before the finding out began. Pushing. That was the first thing. Pushing the wheelchair up a beach of fine sand would have been as impossible as driving a car through deep, unplowed snow. This beach, with its gritty, marly surface, made moving the chair possible, but far from easy. It would roll along smoothly enough for a while, crunching over shells and popping little pebbles to either side of its hard rubber tires, and then it would hit a dip where finer sand had drifted, and Eddie would have to shove, grunting, to get it and its solid, unhelpful passenger through it. The sand sucked greedily at the wheels. You had to simultaneously push and throw your weight against the handles of the chair in a downward direction, or it and its bound occupant would tumble over face first onto the beach. Detta would cackle as he tried to move her without upending her.
"You having a good time back there, honey child?"
she asked each time the chair ran into one of these dry bogs. When the gunslinger moved over to help, Eddie motioned him away.
"You get your chance," he said. "We'll switch off."
"But I think my turns are going to be a hell of a lot longer than his," a voice in his head spoke up. "The way he looks, he's going to have his hands full just keeping himself moving before much longer, let alone moving the woman in this chair. No, sir, Eddie, I'm afraid this bud's for you. It's God's revenge, you know it? All those years you spent as a junkie, and guess what? You're finally the pusher." He uttered a short, out-of-breath laugh.
"What's so funny, white boy?"
Detta asked, and although Eddie thought she meant to sound sarcastic, it came out sounding just a tiny bit angry.
"Ain't supposed to be any laughs in this for me," he thought. "None at all. Not as far as she's concerned."
"You wouldn't understand, babe. Just let it lie."
"I be letting you lie before this be all over," she said. "Be letting you and your badass buddy there lie in pieces all over this beach show. Meantime, you better save your breath to do your pushing with. You already sound like you're getting a little short-winded."
"Well, you talk for both of us then," Eddie panted. "You never seem to run out of wind."
"I gon' break wind, gray meat. Gon' break it over your dead face."
"Promises, promises.
Eddie shoved the chair out of the sand and onto relatively easier going, for a while at least. The sun was not yet fully up, but he had already worked up a sweat. "This is going to be an amusing and informative day," he thought. "I can see that already." Stopping. That was the next thing. They had struck a firm stretch of beach. Eddie pushed the chair along faster, thinking vaguely that if he could keep this bit of extra speed, he might be able to drive right through the next sand trap he happened to strike on pure impetus. All at once, the chair stopped. Stopped dead. The crossbar on the back hit Eddie's chest with a thump. He grunted. Roland looked around, but not even the gunslinger's cat-quick reflexes could stop the lady's chair from going over exactly as it had threatened to do in each of the sand traps. It went, and Detta went with it, tied and helpless, but cackling wildly. She still was when Roland and Eddie finally managed to right the chair again. Some of the ropes had drawn so tight they must be cutting cruelly into her flesh, cutting off the circulation to her extremities. Her forehead was slashed, and blood trickled into her eyebrows. She went on cackling just the same. The men were both gasping, out of breath, by the time the chair was on its wheels again. The combined weight of it and the woman in it must have totaled 250 pounds, most of it chair. It occurred to Eddie that if the gunslinger had snatched Detta from his own when, 1987, the chair might have weighed as much as 60 pounds less. Detta giggled, snorted, blinked blood out of her eyes.
"Look a here, you boys done upset me," she said. "Call your lawyer," Eddie muttered. "Sue us." "And got yourselves all tuckered out getting me back on top again. Must have taken you 10 minutes, too."
The gunslinger took a piece of his shirt, enough of it was gone now, so the rest didn't much matter, and reached forward with his left hand to mop the blood away from the cut on her forehead. She snapped at him, and from the savage click those teeth made when they came together, Eddie thought that if Roland had only been one instant slower in drawing back, Detta Walker would have evened up the number of fingers on his hands for him again. She cackled and stared at him with meanly merry eyes, but the gunslinger saw fear hidden far back in those eyes. She was afraid of him. Afraid because he was the really bad man. Why was he the really bad man? Maybe because on some deeper level she sensed what he knew about her.
"Almost got you, Gray Meat," she said. "Almost got you that time."
And cackled, witch-like. "Hold her head," the gunslinger said evenly. "She bites like a weasel." Eddie held it while the gunslinger carefully wiped the wound clean. It wasn't wide and didn't look deep, but the gunslinger took no chances. He walked slowly down to the water, soaked the piece of shirting in the salt water, and then came back. She began to scream as he approached.
"Don't you be touching me with that thing! Don't you be touching me with no water from where them poison things come from! Get it away! Get it away!"
"Hold her head," Roland said in the same even voice. She was whipping it from side to side. "I don't want to take any chances." Eddie held it and squeezed it when she tried to shake free. She saw he meant business and immediately became still, showing no more fear of the damp rag. It had been only sham after all. She smiled at Roland as he bathed the cut, carefully washing out the last clinging particles of grit.
"In fact, you look more than just tuckered out," Detta observed. "You look sick, Gray Meat. I don't think you're ready for no long trip. I don't think you're ready for nothing like that."
Eddie examined the chair's rudimentary controls. It had an emergency handbrake, which locked both wheels. Detta had worked her right hand over there, had waited patiently until she thought Eddie was going fast enough, and then she had yanked the brake, purposely spilling herself over. Why? To slow them down, that was all. There was no reason to do such a thing. But a woman like Detta, Eddie thought, needed no reasons. A woman like Detta was perfectly willing to do such things out of sheer meanness. Roland loosened her bonds a bit so the blood could flow more freely, then tied her hand firmly away from the brake.
"That be all right, Mr. Man," Detta said, offering him a bright smile filled with too many teeth. "That be all right, just the same. There be other ways to slow you boys down, all sorts of ways."
"Let's go," the gunslinger said tonelessly.
"You all right, man?"
Eddie asked. The gunslinger looked very pale. "Yes, let's go." They started up the beach again. 10. The gunslinger insisted on pushing for an hour, and Eddie gave way to him reluctantly. Roland got her through the first sand trap, but Eddie had to pitch in and help get the wheelchair out of the second. The gunslinger was gasping for air, sweat standing out on his forehead in large beads. Eddie let him go on a little further, and Roland was quite adept at weaving his way around the places where the sand was loose enough to bog the wheels, but the chair finally became mired again, and Eddie could only bear a few moments of watching Roland struggle to push it free, gasping, chest heaving, while the witch, for so Eddie had come to think of her, howled with laughter and actually threw her body backwards in the chair to make the task that much more difficult. And then he shouldered the gunslinger aside and heaved the chair out of the sand with one angry, lurching lunge. The chair tottered, and now he saw, sensed her shifting forward as much as the ropes would allow, doing this with a weird prescience at the exactly proper moment, trying to topple herself again. Roland threw his weight on the back of the chair next to Eddie's, and it settled back. Detta looked around and gave them a wink of such obscene conspiracy that Eddie felt his arms crawl up in goose flesh.
"You almost upset me again, boys," she said. "You want to look out for me now? I ain't nothing but an old cripple lady, so you want to have a care for me now?"
She laughed, laughed fit to split. Although Eddie cared for the woman that was the other part of her, was near to loving her just on the basis of the brief time he had seen her and spoken with her, he felt his hands itch to close around her windpipe and choke that laugh, choke it until she could never laugh again. She peered around again, saw what he was thinking as if it had been printed on him in red ink, and laughed all the harder. Her eyes dared him.
"Go on, Grey Meat, go on. You want to do it, go on and do it."
In other words, don't just tip the chair, tip the woman, Eddie thought. Tip her over for good. That's what she wants. For Detta, being killed by a white man, may be the only real goal she has in life. "Come on," he said, and began pushing again. "We are going to tour the seacoast, sweet thing, like it or not."
"Fuck you,"
she spat. "Cram it, babe," Eddie responded pleasantly. The gunslinger walked beside him, head down. 11. They came to a considerable outcropping of rocks when the sun said it was about 11, and here they stopped for nearly an hour, taking the shade as the sun climbed toward the roof peak of the day. Eddie and the gunslinger ate leftovers from the previous night's kill. Eddie offered a portion to Detta, who again refused, telling him she knew what they wanted to do, and if they wanted to do it, they'd best to do it with their bare hands and stop trying to poison her. That, she said, was the coward's way. "Eddie's right," the gunslinger mused. "This woman has made her own chain of memories. She knows everything that happened to her last night, even though she was really fast asleep. She believed they had brought her pieces of meat which smelled of death and putrescence, had taunted her with it while they themselves ate salted beef and drank some sort of beer from flasks. She believed they had, every now and then, held pieces of their own untainted supper out to her, drawing it away at the last moment when she snatched at it with her teeth, and laughing while they did it, of course. In the world, or at least in the mind, of Detta Walker, honk muffas only did two things to brown women: raped them or laughed at them, or both at the same time. It was almost funny. Eddie Dean had last seen beef during his ride in the sky carriage, and Roland had seen none since the last of his jerky was eaten. Gods alone knew how long ago. As far as beer, he cast his mind back. Tull. There had been beer in Tull, beer and beef. God, it would be good to have a beer. His throat ached, and it would be so good to have a beer to cool that ache. Better even than the Astin from Eddie's world. They drew off a distance from her.
"Ain't I good enough company for white boys like you?" she cawed after them. "Or did you just maybe want to have a pull on each other one's little bitty white candle?"
She threw her head back and screamed laughter that frightened the gulls up crying from the rocks where they had been met in convention a quarter of a mile away. The gunslinger sat with his hands dangling between his knees, thinking. Finally he raised his head and told Eddie,
I can only understand about one word in every 10 she says.
Well, I'm way ahead of you, Eddie replied. I'm getting at least 2 in every 3.
Doesn't matter. Most of it comes back to honky muffa.
Roland nodded. Do many of the dark-skinned people talk that way where you come from? Her other didn't.
Eddie shook his head and laughed.
No. And I'll tell you something sort of funny. At least I think it's sort of funny, but maybe that's just because there isn't all that much to laugh at out here. It's not real. It's not real, and she doesn't even know it.
Roland looked at him and said nothing.
Remember when you washed off her forehead, how she pretended she was scared of the water?
Yes.
You knew she was pretending?
Not at first, but quite soon.
Eddie nodded. That was an act, and she knew it was an act. But she's a pretty good actress, and she fooled both of us for a few seconds. The way she's talking is an act, too. But it's not as good. It's so stupid, so goddamn hokey.
You believe she pretends well only when she knows she's doing it?
Yes. She sounds like a cross between the Darkies and this book called Mandingo I read once, and Butterfly McQueen and Gone with the Wind. I know you don't know those names, but what I mean is she talks like a cliché. Do you know that word?
It means what is always said or believed by people who think only a little or not at all.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it half so good.
Ain't you boys done jerking on them candles of yours yet?
Dedda's voice was growing hoarse and cracked.
Or maybe it's just you can't find them. That it?
Come on. The gunslinger got slowly to his feet. He swayed for a moment, saw Eddie looking at him, and smiled. I'll be all right.
For how long?
As long as I have to be, the gunslinger answered, and the serenity in his voice chilled Eddie's heart. XII. That night, the gunslinger used his last sure live cartridge to make their kill. He would start systematically testing the ones he believed to be duds tomorrow night, but he believed it was pretty much as Eddie had said. They were down to beating the damned things to death. It was like the other nights, the fire, the cooking, the shelling, the eating which was now slow and unenthusiastic.
We're just gassing up, Eddie thought.
They offered food to Dedda, who screamed and laughed and cursed and asked how long they was going to take her for a fool. And then she began throwing her body wildly from one side to the other, never minding how her bonds grew steadily tighter, only trying to upset the chair to one side or the other so they would have to pick her up again before they could eat. Just before she could manage the trick, Eddie grabbed her and Roland braced the wheels on either sides with rocks.
"I'll loosen the ropes a bit if you'll be still," Roland told her.
"Suck shit out my ass, mother."
"I don't understand if that means yes or no." She looked at him, eyes narrowed, suspecting some buried barb of satire in that calm voice. Eddie also wondered, but couldn't tell if there was or not. And after a moment she said sulkily,
"I be still. Too damn hungry to kick up much dickens. You boys gonna give me some real food or you just gonna starve me to death? That's your plan? You too chicken shit to choke me, and I ain't never gonna eat no poison, so that must be your plan. Starve me out. Well, we see show. We gonna see. Show we are."
She offered them her bone-chilling sickle of a grin again. Not long after, she fell asleep. Eddie touched the side of Roland's face. Roland glanced at him, but did not pull away from the touch.
"I'm all right."
"Yeah, you're Jim Dandy. Well, I'll tell you what, Jim, we didn't get along very far today."
"I know." There was also the matter of having used the last live shell, but that was knowledge Eddie could do without, at least tonight. Eddie wasn't sick, but he was exhausted, too exhausted for more bad news. "No, he's not sick, not yet. But if he goes too long without rest, gets tired enough, he'll get sick." In a way, Eddie already was. Both of them were. Cold sores had developed at the corners of Eddie's mouth, and there were scaly patches on his skin. The gunslinger could feel his teeth loosening up in their sockets, and the flesh between his toes had begun to crack open and bleed, as had that between his remaining fingers. They were eating, but they were eating the same thing day in and day out. They could go on that way for a time, but in the end they would die as surely as if they had starved. What we have is shipmate's disease on dry land, Roland thought. Simple as that. How funny. We need fruit. We need greens. Eddie nodded toward the lady. She's going to go right on making it tough. Unless the other one inside her comes back. That would be nice, but we can't count on it, Eddie said. He took a piece of blackened claw and began to scrawl aimless patterns in the dirt. Any idea how far the next door might be? Roland shook his head. I only ask because if the distance between number two and number three is the same as the distance between number one and number two, we could be in deep shit. We're in deep shit right now. Neck deep, Eddie agreed moodily. I just keep wondering how long I can tread water. Roland clapped him on the shoulder, a gesture of affection so rare it made Eddie blink. There's one thing that lady doesn't know, he said. Oh, what's that? We honk muffas can tread water a long time. Eddie laughed at that, laughed hard, smothering his laughter against his arm so he wouldn't wake Detta up. He'd had enough of her for one day, please and thank you. The gunslinger looked at him, smiling. I'm going to turn in, he said. Be on my guard. Yeah, I will. 13. Screaming was next. Eddie fell asleep the moment his head touched the bunched bundle of his shirt, and it seemed only 5 minutes later when Detta began screaming. He was awake at once, ready for anything, some king lobster arisen from the deep to take revenge for its slain children, or a horror down from the hills. It seemed he was awake at once, anyway, but the gunslinger was already on his feet, a gun in his left hand. When she saw they were both awake, Detta promptly quit screaming.
Just thought I'd see if you boys on your toes, she said. Might be wolves. Looks like it enough country for 'em. Wanted to make sure if I saw me a wolf creeping up, I could get you on your feet in time.
But there was no fear in her eyes. They glinted with mean amusement.
Christ, Eddie said groggily.
The moon was up, but barely risen. They had been asleep less than 2 hours. The gunslinger holstered his gun. Don't do it again, he said to the lady in the wheelchair.
What you gonna do if I do, rape me?
If we were going to rape you, you would be one well-raped woman by now, the gunslinger said evenly. Don't do it again. He lay down again, pulling his blanket over him.
Christ, dear Christ, Eddie thought. What a mess this is. What a fucking...
And that was as far as the thought went, before trailing off into exhausted sleep again, and then she was splintering the air with fresh shrieks, shrieking like a fire bell, and Eddie was up again, his body flaming with adrenaline, hands clenched. And then she was laughing, her voice hoarse and raspy. Eddie glanced up and saw the moon had advanced less than 10 degrees since she had awakened them the first time.
She means to keep on doing it, he thought wearily. She means to stay awake and watch us. And when she's sure we're getting down into deep sleep, that place where you recharge, she's going to open her mouth and stop bellowing again. She'll do it and do it and do it until she doesn't have any voice left to bellow with.
Her laughter stopped abruptly. Roland was advancing on her, a dark shape in the moonlight.
You just stay away from me, gray meat,
Detta said, but there was a quiver of nerves in her voice.
You ain't going to do nothing to me.
Roland stood before her, and for a moment Eddie was sure, completely sure, that the gunslinger had reached the end of his patience and would simply swat her like a fly. Instead, astoundingly, he dropped to one knee before her, like a suitor about to propose marriage. Listen, he said, and Eddie could scarcely credit the silky quality of Roland's voice. He could see much the same deep surprise on Detta's face, only there, fear was joined to it. Listen to me, Odetta.
Who you calling Odetta? That ain't my name.
Shut up, bitch, the gunslinger said in a growl. And then, reverting to that same silken voice, if you hear me, and if you can control her at all...
Why you talking at me that way? Why you talking like you was talking to somebody else? You quit that honky jive. You just quit it now, you hear me?
Keep her shut up. I can gag her, but I don't want to do that. A hard gag is a dangerous business. People choke.
You quit it, you honky bullshit voodoo mother!
Odetta. His voice was a whisper, like the onset of rain. She fell silent, staring at him with huge eyes. Eddie had never in his life seen such hate and fear combined in human eyes. I don't think this bitch would care if she did die on a hard gag. She wants to die, but maybe even more she wants you to die. But you haven't died, not so far, and I don't think Detta is brand new in your life. She feels too at home in you, so maybe you can hear what I'm saying. And maybe you can keep some control over her, even if you can't come out yet. Don't let her wake us up a third time, Odetta. I don't want to gag her. But if I have to, I will. He got up, left without looking back, rolled himself into his blanket again, and promptly fell asleep. She was still staring at him, eyes wide, nostrils flaring.
"Honky voodoo bullshit," she whispered.
Eddie lay down, but this time it was a long time before sleep came to claim him, in spite of his deep tiredness. He would come to the brink, anticipate her screams, and snap back. 3 hours or so later, with the moon now going the other way, he finally dropped off. Detta did no more screaming that night, either because Roland had frightened her or because she wanted to conserve her voice for future alarms and excursions, or possibly, just possibly, because Odetta had heard and had exercised the control the gunslinger had asked of her. Eddie slept at last, but awoke sodden and unrefreshed. He looked toward the chair, hoping against hope that it would be Odetta. "Please, God, let it be Odetta this morning. Morning, white bread," Detta said, and grinned her shark-like grin at him.
"Thought you was going to sleep till noon. You can't be doing nothing like that, can you? We got to bus us some miles here. Ain't that the fact of the matter? Sure. And I think you the one going to have to do most of the busting, because that other fella, one with the voodoo eyes, he looking more peaky all the time. I declare he do, yes. I don't think he going to be eating anything much longer. Not even that fancy smoked meat you white bread boys keep for when you done jerking on each other one's little bitty white candles. So let's go, white bread. Daddy don't want to be the one keeping you."
Her lids and her voice both dropped a little. Her eyes peeked at him slyly from their corners.
"Not from starting out, leastways. This going to be a day you remember, white bread," those sly eyes promised. "This gonna be a day you remember for a long, long time. Show."
14. They made 3 miles that day, maybe a shade under. Detta's chair upset twice. Once she did it herself, working her fingers slowly and unobtrusively over to that handbrake again and yanking it. The second time Eddie did, with no help at all, shoving too hard in one of those goddamn sand traps. That was near the end of the day, and he simply panicked, thinking he just wasn't going to be able to get her out this time, just wasn't. So he gave that one last titanic heave with his quivering arms, and of course it had been much too hard, and over she had gone, like Humpty Dumpty falling off his wall, and he and Roland had to labor to get her upright again. They finished the job just in time. The rope under her breasts was now pulled taut across her windpipe. The gunslinger's efficient running slipknot was choking her to death. Her face had gone a funny blue color. She was on the verge of losing consciousness, but still she went on wheezing her nasty laughter.
"Let it be, why don't you?"
Eddie nearly said, as Roland bent quickly forward to loosen the knot.
"Let her choke. I don't know if she wants to do herself, like you said, but I know she wants to do us. So let her go."
Then he remembered Odetta, although their encounter had been so brief and seemed so long ago that memory was growing dim, and moved forward to help. The gunslinger pushed him impatiently away with one hand, only room for one. When the rope was loosened and the lady gasping harshly for breath, which she expelled in gusts of her angry laughter, he turned and looked at Eddie critically. "I think we ought to stop for the night."
"A little further," he was almost pleading. "I can go a little further.
Sure, he be one strong buck. He be good for chopping one more row of cotton, and he still have enough left to give you a little bit of white candle one fine sucking on tonight.
She still wouldn't eat, and her face was becoming all stark lines and angles. Her eyes glittered in deepening sockets. Roland gave her no notice at all, only studied Eddie closely. At last he nodded. A little way. Not far, but a little way. 20 minutes later, Eddie called it quits himself. His arms felt like jello. They sat in the shadows of the rocks, listening to the gulls, watching the tide come in, waiting for the sun to go down and the lobstrosities to come out and begin their cumbersome cross-examinations. Roland told Eddie, in a voice too low for Detta to hear, that he thought they were out of live shells. Eddie's mouth tightened down a little, but that was all. Roland was pleased. "So you'll have to brain one of them yourself," Roland said. "I'm too weak to handle a rock big enough to do the job and still be sure." Eddie was now the one to do the studying. He had no liking for what he saw. The gunslinger waved his scrutiny away. "Never mind," he said. "Never mind, Eddie. What is, is." "Ka," Eddie said. The gunslinger nodded and smiled faintly. "Ka." "Kaka," Eddie said. And they looked at each other and both laughed. Roland looked startled and perhaps even a little afraid of the rusty sound emerging from his mouth. His laughter did not last long. When it had stopped, he looked distant and melancholy.
"That laughing mean you finally managed to jerk each other off,"
Detta cried over at them in her hoarse, failing voice.
"When you gonna get down to the poking? That's what I want to see, that poking."
15. Eddie made the kill. Detta refused to eat, as before. Eddie ate half a piece so she could see, then offered her the other half.
"No, sir," she said, eyes sparking at him. "No, sir. You done put the poison in t'other end. One you trying to give me?"
Without saying anything, Eddie took the rest of the piece, put it in his mouth, chewed, swallowed.
"Don't mean a thing," Detta said sulkily. "Leave me alone, gray meat."
Eddie wouldn't. He brought her another piece.
"You tear it in half. Give me whichever you want. I'll eat it, then you eat the rest."
"Ain't falling for none of your honky tricks, Miss Charlie. Get away from me is what I said, and get away from me is what I meant."
16. She did not scream in the night, but she was still there the next morning. 17. That day they made only 2 miles, although Detta made no effort to upset her chair. Eddie thought she might be growing too weak for acts of attempted sabotage. Or perhaps she had seen there was really no need for them. 3 fatal factors were drawing inexorably together. Eddie's weariness, the terrain, which after endless days of sameness was finally beginning to change, and Roland's deteriorating condition. There were less sand traps, but that was cold comfort. The ground was becoming grainier, more and more like cheap and unprofitable soil, and less like sand. In places, bunches of weeds grew, looking almost ashamed to be there. And there were so many large rocks now, jutting from this odd combination of sand and soil, that Eddie found himself detouring around them, as he had previously tried to detour the lady's chair around the sand traps. And soon enough, he saw there would be no beach left at all. The hills, brown and cheerless things, were drawing steadily closer. Eddie could see the ravines which curled between them, looking like chops made by an awkward giant wielding a blunt cleaver. That night, before falling asleep, he heard what sounded like a very large cat squalling far up in one of them. The beach had seemed endless, but he was coming to realize it had an end after all. Somewhere up ahead, those hills were simply going to squeeze it out of existence. The eroded hills would march down to the sea and then into it, where they might become first a cape or peninsula of sorts, and then a series of archipelagos. That worried him, but Roland's condition worried him more. This time the gunslinger seemed not so much to be burning as fading, losing himself, becoming transparent. The red lines had appeared again, marching relentlessly up the underside of his right arm toward the elbow. For the last 2 days, Eddie had looked constantly ahead, squinting into the distance, hoping to see the door, the magic door. For the last 2 days, he had waited for Odetta to reappear. Neither had appeared. Before falling asleep that night, 2 terrible thoughts came to him, like some joke with a double punchline. What if there was no door? What if Odetta Holmes was dead?
Rise and shine, mofa!
Detta screeched him out of unconsciousness.
I think it'd just be you and me now, honey child. Think your friend done finally passed on. I think your friend be poking the devil down in hell.
Eddie looked at the rolled, huddled shape of Roland, and for one terrible moment he thought the bitch was right. Then the gunslinger stirred, moaned furrowly, and pawed himself into a sitting position.
Well, looky here!
Detta had screamed so much that now there were moments when her voice disappeared almost entirely, becoming no more than a weird whisper, like winter wind under a door.
I thought you was dead, Mr. Man.
Roland was getting slowly to his feet. He still looked to Eddie like a man using the rungs of an invisible ladder to make it. Eddie felt an angry sort of pity, and this was a familiar emotion, oddly nostalgic. After a moment, he understood. It was like when he and Henry used to watch the fights on TV, and one fighter would hurt the other, hurt him terribly, again and again. And the crowd would be screaming for blood, and Henry would be screaming for blood. But Eddie only sat there, feeling that angry pity, that dumb disgust. He'd sat there sending thought waves at the referee. Stop it, man! Are you fucking blind? He's dying out there! Dying! Stop the fucking fight! There was no way to stop this one. Roland looked at her from his haunted, feverish eyes. A lot of people have thought that, Detta. He looked at Eddie. You ready? Yeah, I guess so. Are you? Yes. Can you? Yes. They went on. Around 10 o'clock, Detta began rubbing her temples with her fingers.
Stop, she said. I feel sick. Feel like I'm gonna throw up.
Probably that big meal you ate last night, Eddie said, and went on pushing. You should have skipped dessert. I told you that chocolate layer cake was heavy.
I go throw up.
Stop, Eddie, the gunslinger said. Eddie stopped. The woman in the chair suddenly twisted galvanically, as if an electric shock had run through her. Her eyes popped wide open, glaring at nothing.
I broke your plate, you stinking old blue lady, she screamed. I broke it and I'm fucking glad I did.
She suddenly slumped forward in her chair. If not for the rope, she would have fallen out of it.
Christ, she's dead. She's had a stroke and she's dead, Eddie thought.
He started around the chair, remembered how sly and tricksy she could be, and stopped as suddenly as he had started. He looked at Roland. Roland looked back at him evenly, his eyes giving away not a thing. Then she moaned. Her eyes opened. Her eyes. Odetta's eyes.
Dear God, I've fainted again, haven't I? She said. I'm sorry you had to tie me in. My stupid legs. I think I could sit up a little if you...
That was when Roland's own legs slowly came unhinged, and he swooned, some 30 miles south of the place where the western sea's beach came to an end.